Hello, everybody. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and this is the Staying Healthy Today show. It's a show where it's an interview-driven show where we get key researchers in nutrition and preventive medicine, book authors, people who are very, very credible to talk about nutrition and prevention. And there's kind of two angles to the show. I'm a lifestyle guy, so I always have lifestyle medicine type people on that talk about changing lifestyle and reversing chronic diseases. And then when we talk about, let's say, real medicine, when we talk about treating illness, we like to start from nutrients, homeopathy, diet, and therapies like that before going directly to drugs and surgery. And the thought is that they're less invasive, less costly, less side effects. And if they can be an adjunct to traditional therapy or a therapy in and of themselves, then we think it's a win-win. And someone that I greatly respect and I've had the pleasure of interviewing now, it's like every 2 years we do an interview. So the first one was 2009, and this is Dr. Jeannie Drisco from Kansas, University of Kansas Medical Center, where she's the head of the Integrative Medicine Department. And Dr. Drisco, among many other things, has been doing vitamin C research. And, you know, vitamin C is a very controversial kind of entity, but she's been using IV vitamin C in conjunction with traditional cancer therapy for, I'll ask her when she gets on the air here, but for at least 4, 5, 6 years, and having very positive results. And so we actually use the therapy in conjunction with traditional oncology therapy in our practice to help support cancer patients. And I really want to hear it from someone who is studying this, who is at a medical center, which I think is very unique at doing this. And so we can learn some more and apply this so we can help people and maybe improve cancer outcome, reduce side effects from chemotherapy or radiation therapy. So, Dr. Drisco, welcome on the show.
Kirk, thank you so much. And please call me Jeannie throughout the interview. It's fine.
All right. I'll call you Jeannie. So, Jeannie Drisco, tell us about yourself. Tell us a little about your educational background and how you ended up being at the University of Kansas Medical Center studying vitamin C therapy.
Well, Kirk, like so many people in integrative medicine, you have a health epiphany. There's some sort of health crisis, and it doesn't get really addressed by conventional medicine. And then all of a sudden you realize that there's better ways to treat it with restoring the body nutritionally, which you've advocated for many years now. And once you realize that, you can't go back. So I had the good fortune of training with Dr. Hugh Reardon down at the center in Wichita, Kansas. Dr. Reardon has since passed away, but he was a great mentor. And I did a fellowship with him. And when I was finished, the dean of the School of Medicine at KU Medical Center asked me to come to start a integrative medicine program. That was 1997, and I started it in 1998.
Wow, 1998. So define what integrative medicine is, because it's a, I don't know, it's a kind of a unusual term. It includes a lot of things. So what does it mean to you?
It does. There's so much under that umbrella. As you know, the old term was holistic, and then it was complementary and alternative medicine, and now it's integrative. But what that means for us specifically at KU Integrative Medicine is that we try and combine the best of conventional medicine with the nutritional, biochemical aspects, all of the good things of both camps.
Well, isn't actually, I mean, this is kind of a, because I have a, you know, that's a little man complex in the sense of medicine that we're practicing real medicine, Jeannie. I hate to tell you, but
you're not going to get an argument from me.
I think we're practicing just as scientific and just as real medicine as when it's appropriate to do surgery and when it's appropriate to give a pharmaceutical. So sometimes the word integrative medicine I get a little crazy with, but
I do have to distinguish myself here by that term. And actually, one of the internal medicine doctors stopped me in the hallway and said, "You're really practicing advanced medical care." He said, "Don't use integrative. Use advanced medical care," which I think is really right on.
Well, I think one of the reasons I love interviewing you, aside from the work that you've done, when you're out in the trenches in the real world, you know, people come at you and patients come at you with honest questions. Well, why isn't my oncologist doing this? Why isn't my internist doing this? Why isn't, you know, if you're so whatever, science-based, and I try and be, then why isn't, you know, aren't they doing it? And then I will sometimes, with your work, I'll say, listen, this has been doing at the University of Kansas Medical Center. I'm not making this stuff up. So that I appreciate you doing for, because that takes a little bit of the pressure off so someone's more open to looking at actually what we're saying.
Boy, I bet you agree. There's been a shift in the past maybe year and a half, where there are more and more conventional doctors seeking out these types of therapies. It's really exciting.
So let's talk about vitamin C because, well, it's important and cancer is important. So how did you end up taking your integrative medicine journey to the vitamin C journey to the cancer journey?
Well, after Fred Klinner kept IV vitamin C alive, and some of the other doctors that once it had been driven underground, my mentor, Hugh Reardon, learned from those people, and then he in turn trained me and many other people as well through the center in Wichita. So it was by the grace of God that I learned IV vitamin C from one of the masters.
Well, just for our listening audience, Jeannie mentioned Dr. Frederick Klinner. Dr. Frederick Klinner was in, I believe, North Carolina or someone in the
That's
South.
That's correct.
And
yeah,
he was in
North Carolina.
And he did things with vitamin C. I mean, we're talking about treating some serious problems. Brown recluse, black spider bites in the emergency room. He treated polio with high dose, I mean, among other things, with high dose vitamin C back in the day where I don't know how you got away with it, but in the 40s and 50s, and if you go back to medical journals, some of the Southern medical journals, you'll see his work there. So anybody out there, when you're listening to this, just Google Frederick Klinner and vitamin C, and you'll be surprised at where vitamin C came from. It wasn't just kind of popped up overnight with Linus Pauling. So you somehow got more focused on cancer and vitamin C. How did that happen?
Well, I saw some really remarkable things when I was training under Dr. Reardon, and it really piqued my interest. And then I had the opportunity to work with the oncologist here at KU Medical Center, and there's some really tremendous cancer doctors here, and they were open to working with me. So some of them sent me patients, and then when I started doing the research, the clinical research studies, they were sending me patients for research projects. So it's been a wonderful collaborative experience. And then I had the good fortune of getting to know Mark Levine at the NIH, who has done some of the seminal work with vitamin C used as a cancer therapy. And his postdoc at the time was Dr. Kay Chin. And Kay, eventually, when she was finished with her postdoc, came here to KU Med to work with me. So now Mark Levine, Kay Chin, and I, and others around the country are continuing that pioneering work in IV vitamin C with cancer. But we're also looking at other disease processes like diabetes, like infection, like chronic fatigue. So there's a lot of things that we're looking at that can be helped by IV vitamin C.
So IV vitamin C. So that's where I always pop, you know, Mark Levine's from National Institutes of Health. What did you say? Or that was
yes,
it? Yeah. So
that's correct.
Yeah. So I always say that to the patients, you know, we're not making this up. There's a guy at the National Institutes of Health is overseeing Jeannie Drisco, and that helps. I'm telling you, it helps to get started in the doorway. So let's stay with cancer. Linus Pauling Institute, vitamin C to bowel tolerance, orally.
Yes.
You know, used to read anecdotal reports of it benefiting some cancer patients, but you have a different insight into IV vitamin C or vitamin C, if you could explain
That's right. Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was a Scottish surgeon, came to Linus Pauling and showed him his work with terminal cancer patients, and he had been giving them 10 grams of vitamin C. He'd been giving it both in the vein and by mouth. And so Linus Pauling got really excited about that, and they published a series of papers in the 70s. And then Linus Pauling went to the NIH and insisted that there be a study of IV vitamin C in cancer. But unfortunately, and there were two, and they were done at the Mayo Clinic. Unfortunately, they did not use IV vitamin C. They used oral vitamin C. And oral vitamin C and IV vitamin C are two very different animals. The IV vitamin C is a drug. It's a pharmaceutical. The oral vitamin C is just that. It's a vitamin. And they have very different actions.
Well, you want to get into those?
Well, sure. The IV vitamin C, when you give it in the vein, it gets transferred into the space around the cells, and it's called the extracellular space. And in that space, not in the bloodstream, not in the cancer cell, but in the space around those cells, it turns into hydrogen peroxide. And it's pretty clear to us that hydrogen peroxide is what is killing those cancer cells. Now, when you take oral vitamin C, you cannot get a high enough level to drive it into that space, that extracellular space. So that gets, the oral vitamin C gets excreted very rapidly. The blood level stays low. But with the IV dosing, you can push that blood level really high and drive it into the extracellular space.
Well, before we get to how it works, I just want to say we're talking to Dr. Jeannie Driscoll from the University of Kansas. Is it Kansas University or University of Kansas? I always
Well, it's both.
Okay, so, good, because I always get confused saying it. Okay, Jeannie Driscoll from the University of Kansas Medical Center Integrative Medicine Department. We're talking about vitamin C in cancer, but in particular, IV vitamin C. So why doesn't hydrogen peroxide kill the good cells and only cancer cells? Let me ask you that.
Well, we're not 100% sure about the mechanism of how the mechanism being how it's working. We do know that it's very safe, and we've shown this repeatedly in cell tissues and in animals, that the normal cells are unharmed. The cancer cells, they have a very different machinery, a different biochemistry. And so when the hydrogen peroxide attacks the cancer cell, it doesn't have a way to turn off the effects of the hydrogen peroxide. There's biochemical processes, catalase, and some other things that just aren't working in cancer cells that are working in normal cells. So the normal cells are unharmed. It can get rid of the hydrogen peroxide, so to speak. And that doesn't happen in cancer cells.
All right. So how do you decide? What am I trying to say here? You have a cancer patient. How do you know how much to give a particular cancer patient and how long and how frequent to give it once you decide? Or do you decide all cancers you're going to give it?
We don't believe that every cancer is responsive to IV vitamin C. I mean, it's a chemotherapy, and all cancers aren't responsive to all chemotherapy. It's just not the way. I wish it was, but it's not. But how we decide is we start the IV vitamin C at, let's say, a 10-gram or a 25-gram, not milligram, gram dose in an appropriate fluid, and give that and then test the blood. And we're looking for a certain blood level. Now, most chemotherapy, they give it on the size of the body and adjust it to how organs are working, like kidney and liver. But with vitamin C, if there's normal kidney function and we test some other things to make sure it's safe, we give that until we get to a specific blood level, which is a target level that kills most of the cancer cells. And that's between 350 milligrams per deciliter and 450 milligrams per deciliter. And that's we've shown that in cell tissue and animal studies to be a pretty good dose for most cancers.
All right. So here's
now that being said, we're not 100% sure that a higher dose might not be a benefit. But we're not sure if it's a two-edged sword either. If it's too high, what are some of the bad things that might happen?
All right. So again, then I people come in, let's say, to our office and they're getting traditional therapy and they come with all kinds of cancers. So what are the cancers that you think are good for IV vitamin C? Or maybe the reverse would be if there's less, when shouldn't we give IV vitamin C for cancer? Whatever's
well,
the shorter
if it's
version.
Appropriate, right. If it's appropriate, we try IV vitamin C in any patient that is willing to undergo the therapy. and then we follow it by how it's affecting the patient. So, and we're lucky in that we've got oncologists that are willing to order scans and blood tests and so on and so forth. So we're able to follow pretty carefully if we're having an effect on the tumor or not. And if we're not having an effect on that tumor, if it's continuing to grow, then we don't continue the IV vitamin C.
And how, so you're at an advantage now because you're at a university medical center and we're the clinicians out in the trench, so to speak,
yes,
there.
But you know, you should be able to have some scanning. The patients often have oncologists that right. are willing to continue treating them. And if that's the case, then you're able to get CT scans, PET scans, whatever, because that's pretty standard of care.
Well, there.
Cancer.
Okay, well, there's a couple things. One is there a cancer I shouldn't use it in?
Well, I'll tell you what's difficult to treat, and that is a prostate cancer that's metastatic, that's in the bones, let's say, and breast cancer that's metastatic, or in the liver and the brain and the bones. Those two cancers seem to be a little bit more difficult to treat, although we do treat patients. And then we've added some other tools that we think are additive with the IV vitamin C, and that is the ketogenic diet, and I'm sure you know all about that, and Dr. Thomas Seyfried's work with the ketogenic diet, and hyperbaric oxygen. And when we can combine those three tools, we're seeing very remarkable outcomes. And we're getting ready, actually, in 2014, we're going to be starting animal studies. We've talked to Dr. Seyfried and Dr. Dominic D'Agostino at the University of South Florida, and we're all trying to collaborate on doing those animal studies together. So it would be ketogenic diet alone, hyperbaric alone, IVC alone, and then the combinations.
Okay.
And there's anecdotal evidence or just clinical evidence that the three together are unbelievably wonderful.
Good. Well, then we get to watch you do it. It's a find out.
You get to.
All right. So I want to kind of hang here on vitamin C IV for a second, or not a second, a few minutes. So what is your, if you start out 10, 25 grams, so for the clinicians that don't do that type of blood testing, because it's not an easy thing to do.
It's not.
And so I would say most clinicians out in the field don't do the blood test. I mean,
no, they guess. Mm-hmm.
That's us. Okay, so.
Yeah, well, and you're absolutely right, and I just want to make that point clear. Kirk, you're absolutely right. The blood test is very fussy. You have to have it drawn immediately, and then immediately it has to be frozen. If there's any misstep along the way of getting that blood to the lab and processed, your vitamin C degrades very rapidly. So you might have a perfect blood level when you draw the blood, but by the time it gets to the lab, it's going to be half of what you think it is. So that being said, we found that if you do a finger stick, and we published this in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition, and if you do a finger stick blood glucose at baseline before you start the IV vitamin C and write that number down, and then do the finger stick again once you turn that IV off, you're going to get a very high number and you subtract the two. Now, the reason you get a very high number after the IV vitamin C is complete is that the molecule of vitamin C looks like a molecule of glucose. So the finger stick measures the IV vitamin C as blood glucose. So don't be alarmed. You don't have to give them insulin. They're not out of control with their blood sugars. It's just that IV vitamin C.
We're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll come back. And
I want
to hear the rest of this because I got to really focus on that. So we're going to go to a break and be right back. Hello, everyone. This is Kirk Hamilton, and welcome back to the Staying Healthy Today show. And it is, well, my great pleasure to talk to Dr. Jeannie Drisco, head of the Integrative Medicine Department at University of Kansas Medical Center. And we're talking about IV vitamin C and cancer. And See, there's two parts to me, Jeannie, here. See, there's the clinician part that has, like, I finally have her one-on-one to ask these questions that we struggle with. And then I think of the public out of the right side of my head that says, okay, just don't get too technical here, Kirk, and get the general picture out there, because we will digest this at our office and talk about it. And we have, you know, as the ad shows, we have a family practice doc, Dr. Will Moore. We'd have Dr. Michael Quiker, who's an osteopath. And then we have a big IV department. And we have an osteopathic, I mean, a chiropractor and another PA, Wendy Pomerantz. So
Well, let me just tell you where you can get that article. It's in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition in June of 2013.
Okay.
About finger sticks. So you don't have to, I don't have to talk about it in depth.
No, that's all right. But what I do want to get into is, I still want to stay with vitamin C, is number one is you make it very distinct that you don't add things to it except magnesium. Now, I was going to ask you a question there, because Dr. Frederick Klenner always put calcium and mm-hmm. he'd throw a couple of B vitamins in there, I think. So why is it only magnesium that you mix in your IV vitamin C?
Well, anecdotally, we found that there was no calcium shift. I mean, that's always been a medical myth, so to speak. We've got medical myths in conventional medicine and medical myths in integrative medicine, and that was one of the medical myths, that with IV vitamin C you get a calcium shift. Well, I've done a very extensive pharmacokinetic study where I'm looking at vitamin C in the vein as a drug, and I did not find that calcium shift. I haven't published this yet, but there's no reason that you need to add calcium. The shivering and the shaking usually comes from the administration of the IV too quickly, and there's probably some other effects on the metabolism with blood sugar and so on and so forth, but no calcium is needed.
So then why do you give the magnesium?
The magnesium has a number of things that it does. One, it helps the blood vessel tolerate that infusion of vitamin C. It's not acid. Everybody thinks that it's an acid. It's been buffered, so it's not an acid. But it is a little irritating to the vein. So the magnesium keeps the vein protected, so to speak.
Okay. And you give about 400 milligrams? It's not a big dose.
About 400. It's not a big dose. And it seems to be just fine. As we increase the vitamin C up to 100, we will increase the magnesium.
Okay. Well, here's the counterpart to that. I get the vitamin C by itself, and I get the magnesium part. But, you know, for years, our colleagues, we threw everything in the kitchen sink in there that had some kind of immune potentiating effect individually. And that's a no-no, correct?
Well, and again, this is unpublished data, but we found in a small group of patients that when you added the B vitamins to the bag, and this is high-dose vitamin C for cancer. This is not the Myers cocktail, the lower doses for general medical support or infection. But with the B vitamins with the higher doses, we weren't seeing the hydrogen peroxide coming out in the urine. So we think that it's reducing the effect of hydrogen peroxide. Now, that needs to be studied more, and we just haven't had time to do that yet, but that is something very important. So for safety's sake, for our cancer patients at high-dose vitamin C, we do not add the B vitamins.
And also make a comment on glutathione, you know?
And we did do that study in animals, and we found that when the glutathione was given at the same time, these are animals that have cancer, that when you add the glutathione with the vitamin C, you're reducing the effectiveness of the vitamin C. And we even checked to see if vitamin C at high doses turns into what's called a prooxidant. So we checked to see if glutathione didn't do that too, but it doesn't. At high doses, it's still an antioxidant. So you're fighting your antioxidant and your prooxidant. So you're wiping out that effect of vitamin C. Now, glutathione has wonderful benefits in neuropathy, so it's certainly something you might want to use on a different day. But adding them together does not make sense, and we showed that in our little study, animal study.
Okay, so you have a patient that comes in, and let's say it's a breast cancer. Let's take pancreatic cancer because that's a toughie. And they got a solid tumor in there, and they're getting gemcitabine and what other chemotherapeutic substances. How frequently do you give vitamin C in an optimal world where someone can afford it, let's say, because that always comes into the picture?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I'm paraphrasing Dr. Reardon now, but if it was me, I would probably hook myself up every day. But, you know, that's not reasonable for most people. But with a very aggressive solid tumor, at least 3 days a week. And then there's some people I hear that, oh, they'll do it 1 week, but then the patient doesn't come back until a month later. We tell our patients, if you're going to start IV vitamin C for cancer, it's a commitment. And you can't just drop in every once in a while. Either you're going to do it or you're not. And we don't try and talk people into it. We almost try and talk people out of it.
Yeah.
So,
I get
but
it.
At least, yeah, for those aggressive solid tumors, at least 3 days per week.
Okay, so let's take, so I got a solid tumor person. So let's take another scenario. It's very frequent. Somebody has a breast cancer, the lump is removed, they could go on Arimidex, or they could go on tamoxifen, they could go on X, Y, and Z. So they're really being monitored with no cancer. Well, mm-hmm. Theoretically, the cancer's gone. It's not in nodes. And they're on some kind of chemotherapy. Then what would your frequency be?
Then, you know, that's tough. These are questions that come up all the time. And there's all kinds of patients that are apparently, in quotes, disease-free that have just had their cancer removed surgically. You know, our theory is that there's probably some circulating cancer cells still. So at least once a week and maybe twice a week, but at least once a week and for about 6 months.
Okay.
But then what do you measure? What do you follow? You know, that's always the question.
I get that every day. So I go, wait until I interview Dr. Driscoll again. I'm going to get the answer.
Yeah, and I was really helpful, wasn't I?
No, it's funny because I get that all the time.
Yeah, and then what about the Arimidex? What about these therapies? I mean, at least they have some large studies that show that in 5 years there's a difference between, you know, different groups of patients that either do or don't, but we haven't done that yet.
Okay. Well, let me get to one other thing before I beat that vitamin C to death, and that is the dose range. So you started off at a very low dose, 10, 25 grams, and you do it by obviously measuring the blood post-IV. Now, in a pancreatic cancer patient, are you 75 grams, 100 grams? You know, if you were going to shotgun it, which most clinicians mm-hmm. do, where would you
really
shotgun?
Interesting. Because you're going to start doing those finger sticks, though, aren't you?
And well, I'm going to read the article.
Back to me. Yeah,
I'm
well,
in
you're,
trouble
it's
now.
Easy. You are. I'm going to give you a quiz in a month. So anyway, the more aggressive the tumor, you'll find that they need higher doses. So pancreatic's a very good example. Those patients usually end up receiving 100 to 125 grams. In each infusion, at least 3 days a week. So, and there's something about those tumors, we don't understand this yet, but they seem to need or consume or whatever word you want to use, more vitamin C than, let's say, an infection, for example. You can get to a high, very high blood level in a healthy or an infected patient much quicker than in a solid tumor patient. So there's this whole gradient.
So 100 to 125 grams, I mean, how the patient's going to sit in there. How long does your patient sit in there to get that IV?
Well, we give it at a half a gram a minute. And by the way, at that rate, we don't get shivering. We have them eat. We have them drink. They bring their little lunch packs in. And we try and teach good eating habits. We have two marvelous dietitians here in our clinic that are just they're over the moon. They're so great. But anyway, so they bring their food. We have filtered water for them to drink their entire time. And at a half a gram a minute, they don't get the shivering. And they do really well. They feel great. So a half a gram a minute, that's 100 grams. That's 200 minutes. So it turns into a party back in our clinic sometimes. Patients, you know, they really bond. And there's probably something therapeutic about that as well.
Yeah, they swap therapies. They swap all kinds of stuff. You never know sometimes.
They do. They do all kinds of integrative tips, too.
All kinds of tips. So you have an oncologist who comes from the the dogma that it's, you know, vitamin C is going to act like an antioxidant and it's going to negate chemotherapy or radiation therapy. And so how do you answer that? Or what do I send them?
You send them the Kay Chin articles from 2005, 2007, and 2008. And if they don't, and then there's other people that have replicated these. There's 10 other groups that have replicated all of this research. So if they say that, they're not up with the literature.
Yeah, that doesn't help me when I'm talking to an oncologist to tell him he's not up with the literature.
So you get those three papers. And I can send you links to those papers.
Could you? That'd be great.
Yeah, and you just send those papers over with them because it's pro-oxidative therapy. They just don't know what they're talking about.
I know. I got
it's an education problem.
And you spell Chen. How do you spell the last name of K?
It's C-H-E-N and first name K-Q-I. She does pronounce it K rather than Chi, but it is Q-I. And they're in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, 2005, 2007, and 2008.
Perfect.
And they're the seminal landmark papers.
We were talking to Dr. Jeannie Driscoll about IV vitamin C and cancer. She's from the University of Kansas Medical Center. She's the head of the Integrative Medicine Department. One other thing about, you actually educated this a couple months ago. If someone is getting chemotherapy, they can get IV vitamin C. If they get radiation therapy, you said don't do it at the same time. Can you explain that?
Yes. That we found, again, this is anecdotal evidence and not research evidence. We found that radiation and IV vitamin C, it potentiates the radiation, and it makes the dose of radiation even stronger. So there's more likely for tissue burn and other untoward effects. So that's something we also need to study. We've talked about it. But I tell you, we are researching so much right now that we just can't do it all. We need more researchers.
I get it. Do you ever give IV vitamin C at the same time as chemotherapy or on the same day?
Absolutely. For my ovarian cancer study, which hopefully it's under review right now in Science Translational Medicine, and we're keeping our fingers crossed that it's going to be accepted for publication. But in our ovarian cancer study, the IV vitamin C was used as the fluid loading dose right before the chemotherapy was given.
So how much did they get? Did they sit there for 3 hours and get an IV and then get? I'm kind of confused. How much?
Well, those women, they were somewhere between 50 and 75 grams, 75 grams generally. So that was about an hour and a half, maybe, you know, a little bit longer, or 2 hours rather, I'm sorry. And I can't do math. Anyway, a couple hours, and then they received their chemotherapy. But they're going to get that fluid loading dose anyway. They get that fluid right before chemo anyway.
What's the fluid that you put your vitamin C in?
At the higher doses, we use sterile water, and I had to educate my pharmacist here that it was okay, and because usually with sterile water, it's what's called hypoosmolar, so but the vitamin C is so dense that it raises it, so it's safe. It's best to give it with sterile water at the high doses.
Last thing on the technique. You're giving it three times a week at 100, 125 grams. How do the people's veins hold out, or are you have ports that you put in?
Both. And again, we don't have problems with the veins. The ports are, you know, that's a slam dunk. You can, you know, drive a truck through a port and you're generally fine. So never worry about that. But with the vein, with that magnesium in it, and the infusion rate, we've been very fortunate. We usually don't have trouble with veins.
Your cancer patients, are they taking nutritional supplements, and do you have a top five that you like, or is it individualized per cancer?
Well, it's all individualized because we have very extensive testing methods for all the micronutrients, including amino acids and the essential fatty acids, the good fats, as well as the vitamins and minerals. And so we tailor our nutrients to our patients.
Well, then why don't you, if you could do that, just so a new cancer patient comes into you, it's not a 15-minute visit, is it?
No, it's usually an hour and a half.
Right. And from there...
And you have to find out, too, what their background is, why they got the cancer, you know, what they were exposed to environmentally.
Mm-hmm. Now, so give me give me the basic battery of tests that you would do to nutritionally assess a cancer patient.
Well, as I said, we're using the ketogenic diet a lot now, and so we look at, of course, blood glucose is critical because cancer cells are sugar feeders. And what we try and do is cut off the sugar supply. So we're looking at the blood glucose and the hemoglobin A1C. We look at zinc and copper. We see a lot of cancer patients that have very high copper and low zinc. And some people are chelating copper, but we don't advocate that. All you do is replenish zinc. You give zinc maybe 3 times a day, and it'll pull the copper down because of the competitive nature at the gut. And we look at C-reactive protein. And we're looking at, as I said, the essential fatty acids and the ketones, both in the urine and in the blood. So there's a lot of things that we're doing.
So you do an essential fatty acid profile. How do you assess for vitamins and minerals, or do you?
We do. Oh, absolutely. And we have a lab rec that's KU Med, but it, you know, on it, it could be Quest, it could be LabCorp. Mayo, you know, the Mayo Lab, whatever, they all do these routine blood tests. They do vitamin A, they do vitamin C, they run vitamin E, including the gamma and the delta, and they you can get order anything, selenium, you name it, and you can get it ordered from a conventional lab.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, serendipitously, 4 or 5 years ago, we all started measuring vitamin D, and I go, well, if Medicare and Quest has vitamin D, maybe they have vitamin E and zinc and A, and so I can order anything of serum levels. We're going to take a quick break, Jeannie, and then we'll be right back and finish up our interview. Hi, everyone. My name is Kirk Hamilton. I'm host of the Staying Healthy Today show, and I'm having a blast today, folks, because this is like a kid in a candy store when you get the teacher and you get to, like, pick her brain, and then you get to go take a test because you cheated because you have all the answers. and then the real good part is I've taped it, so I can always play this back whenever I want, so I can remember it. And this is we're interviewing Dr. Jeannie Driscoll from the University of Kansas Medical Center, and we started off on IV vitamin C and cancer and how to use that, and I think we did a pretty good job with that. And since you brought up the two topics of the ketogenic diet and hyperbaric oxygen and they relate to cancer, let's just stay with that. So explain to the audience the ketogenic diet in its simplest format.
Well, what we're doing is simply taking away the sugars, the carbohydrates, and replacing it with a higher fat and a higher protein level, and really trying to reduce, almost negate those carbohydrates. We found, and this is through our conversations with a researcher in Greece and then with Dr. Seyfried, the ketones are very important, and there's something that the ketones are doing that we don't quite understand yet, beyond just reducing the sugar burning. But there is also something very, very, very critical about getting that blood glucose way down. So some people think, well, I've got ketones in my urine, or I do the finger stick and I've got ketones in my blood, but it's not enough unless you get that sugar down, that glucose down in cancer patients.
So you're trying to starve the cancer cell of the sugar and that?
Yes.
Okay. And so tell us a basic... a ketogenic diet, what would you be eating?
Well, we all tried it here in the clinic early in the year just to see what it was like, and it was hell. But, you know, the funny thing is when you take a healthy person and put them on a ketogenic diet, it doesn't seem to resonate as well, but our cancer patients are loving it. But basically you're eating vegetables that are not starchy, and fruit that's not starchy at a minimum, and really increasing your good fat intake. And we added something called MCT oil, a medium chain triglyceride oil, and adding it after each meal, which seems to help. So a lot of fat, good fats. I want to emphasize that, good fats and good quality protein.
So you're probably having free-range animals, correct?
Absolutely.
And then,
and there's a lot of people that say don't eat anything with a face, but you during
I'm one of them.
Care, yeah,
but
well,
I'm open. I'm open.
Care, yeah, you need protein, and you can't get the nucleic acids and some of the things you need to rebuild your tissues from just a vegetarian diet. So, you know, at the very least, introduce some animal protein.
So I know the ketogenic diet's been used for epilepsy, and I remember Dr. Maroon talking about brain tumors. So is the goal of the whole ketogenic diet to keep the blood sugar down? Because we went through that. The goal?
That's the goal. I think that's the goal. Get the ketones up. Get the blood sugar down.
Okay, so let's say you got a pancreatic cancer patient for the heck of it, and big tumor, and you go on vitamin C, and you get on the ketogenic diet, and things are improving. And let's say the cancer, you resolve it. Do you stay on this ketogenic diet forever, or what's the deal?
We're not 100% sure about that yet, but there is another diet that is coming here from Germany. It's used extensively in Germany. It's called metabolic balance. And we're finding for people that are relatively healthy or people that maybe are transitioning off the ketogenic diet that the metabolic balance type diet can also keep their ketones up not as high and also keep their blood glucose down but not as low. So it's sort of a middle ground.
So,
between the standard American diet and the ketogenic diet.
All right, so I guess what I'm saying is, so you're a healthy person. Why aren't you eating the ketogenic diet as a preventive diet?
We're mostly here in this clinic more metabolic balance because we're healthy.
Uh-huh.
So that's 3 meals a day, 5 hours in between, lots of water, good quality protein, start the meal with a bite of protein, good fats, vegetables and fruit. And so you limit your carbohydrates, your processed food. You can have it, but you limit it.
Well, for another day, because the healthiest people in the world are the Okinawan centenarians, and they, 60% of their calories come from carbohydrates. So, but for cancer, I get it.
Yeah, it's individual.
All right. So let's talk about hyperbaric oxygen. How does that roll in here?
Well, again, if you think about the tumor, it's burning, instead of burning oxygen, amino acids and good fats, it's burning sugar. So if you're taking away its fuel source, you want to turn that mitochondria back on. And I've already jumped to a new topic here, a new word. But the mitochondria in cancer cells, which is the power plant of each cell, there's hundreds to thousands, those mitochondria are turned off or turned down in cancer cells. So if you're in hyperbaric oxygen, you're going to drive oxygen into that tumor cell that's pretty, doesn't have good blood flow, doesn't really get oxygenated very well. It likes that environment of low oxygen. So you've got a hyperbaric oxygen forcing oxygen into the tissues. You have a chance of switching that mitochondria back on, and then it recognizes, oh my gosh, this cell is not good, and it goes into self-killing or apoptosis.
So a cancer cell, I think I've heard this before and I explain it simply to myself. when you rev it up metabolically, that's not good, correct? Or did I say that wrong?
When you rev it up metabolically with sugar,
it burns itself out, so to speak?
Oh, if you rev it up with oxygen,
right,
reduce sugar and good fats and amino acids, then if you're going to turn that mitochondria back on, yes, rev it up, turn back on the motor, so to speak, and then it'll kill itself.
So if you turn a cancer cell mitochondria on, let's say you gave a bunch of, let's say, for example, like heart disease, CoQ10 and carnitine and magnesium and ribose, would that be wrong?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we do that all the time.
For a cancer patient, okay.
Absolutely. So, in fact, we're measuring carnitine levels as well.
Okay. And so how often do they get hyperbaric oxygen?
Well, again, that's, these poor patients, it's their full-time job. And it depends on the resources, their finances as well. And just as a disclaimer, they do not get the hyperbaric oxygen here at KU because it's not an approved therapy for cancer. So I don't want anybody to think that it is. So we have a standalone facility that we have a relationship with, so we send our patients there. And if they can get it three times a week, again with IV vitamin C, and they're on the ketogenic diet, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's a chunk of change.
That's all. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of time.
Well, I guess if you're fighting for your life, you know, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so those are the two new things, the hyperbaric oxygen, the ketogenic diet's not new, but it is kind of new the way you're presenting it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else for cancer that you like to throw in the mix there? How about the mind-body? Anything cool there?
Well, we are doing neurofeedback. It's a computerized-based, EEG-driven treatment, neurofeedback, and we're using that for patients that have in quotes, chemo brain. So, and they often have sleep and memory issues after chemotherapy. So we're doing some retraining of brain waves to help them clear those problems after chemotherapy.
Good. How can somebody, if they want to, how do they connect with the integrative medicine department? Let's say they're cruising the internet. What do they do?
KU Integrative Medicine in Google, and it should pop up.
And I see your nice shining face and your whole staff there, if I remember right.
Yes, my staff is awesome. We are just, what a wonderful team.
Well, you're doing great work, and it must be.
We have a naturopathic doctor on staff, too.
Is that work? That works at the medical school? No problems? Everybody?
Well, we were trailblazers, but it's working really well. And the head of the hospital actually had her come down to talk to her.
Is there a little question? You used to have a little question and answer thing on your website. You know, common questions that popped up and answers.
Yes, I think those still might be there. We had to clean it up a little bit. There were some things that needed to change, but I believe it's still out there.
Okay. Well, this has been great. I hope it's not 2 years again, though. That's not. Otherwise, I keep you too long.
Well, this hour goes by so fast, and I'm so thankful that you think of me and interview me. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope lots of people this year, more than last year and the year before, listen to it, and because you're making a difference. So, Jeannie, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Kirk. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Well, that was a pleasure for me. Maybe some of you all out there got a little bored with me getting into some specifics, but you know, for me, you're in the trenches, you're working really hard, you're trying to do what's right, you're trying to be as legitimate as you can, and then you have somebody at a medical center doing this kind of therapy, and then also being overseen by like Mark Levin at the National Institutes of Health, and all we want to do is do the best for our patients. So if it's chemo at the moment, then it's chemo at the moment. If it's a joint venture, it's a joint venture. So, Mark, did you get anything out of that?
I did. I really enjoyed, and I heard something just in passing that I think I want you to follow up on, Kirk, when you get a chance, that she was talking about cancer and having to look at the environmental exposure. And I had always thought, you know, well, cancer kind of runs in families, so maybe there's a genetic component. But then I thought, well, maybe what's in common in the family is what they're eating and what they're exposed to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have estrogenic compounds and all kinds of plastics and things. In fact, every time I use a Tupperware thing, and somebody out there would go, shame on me, you know, I think about the plastic that we use. Anything else you get from that?
Just that it's a big, big deal when you have cancer. You really got to go all out and fight it.
Yeah, I think the hardest part for me as a, we'll use the word integrative medicine person. It always seems like because it's out of pocket, that we're spending a lot of people's money. And the truth is, whatever techniques that the traditional people use, they get covered, and those are much more expensive, but it's not perceived to that like the patient. So you can't do everything that you'd like to do and learn. Like, I would love to give people 3 days a week of IV vitamin C and all the other things. But the highlights are, one is look into the ketogenic diet. It's been used for a long time, actually, in seizures in children. To help stop seizures. And then I recently heard it was used in brain tumors, and now they're using it at KU and for Kansas, at the University of Kansas. And you want to keep your sugar low. Now, I'm still a plant-based guy. But here's the thing. Processed sugars, absolutely. Low glycemic, absolutely. Hyperbaric oxygen, I have seen lots of people use that for all kinds of things, neuropathies, head injuries. Now, in fact, there is a place in town here that you can have it done. So this is a very worthwhile interview, and hopefully if you can listen to this on the air, and then also it'll be posted on my website, prescription2000.com, and I want to give a little plug for myself. This type of interview, I've got over 85 podcasts like this on there, and these really help people. And you just need to go to my website, prescription2000.com, and you'll see the podcast there. And right above my picture, my little video, there'll be more interviews. Click here, and you click on that, and you type in cancer, and this will pop up, and heart disease, and whatever. There's also a newsletter I have called Kirk's Power Aging. And if you sign up for that newsletter, I don't send out trash. I send out links to this kind of stuff and educational stuff. You'll see my site is probably too overwhelming with free educational material. And lastly, go to educational handouts on the right side of the homepage, and you'll see 21-day healthy eating program. If you do that, it will be a guide on basic dietary tips on how to keep you well. And I give that to every single one of my patients. So my name is Kirk Hamilton. This is the Staying Healthy Today show. Until next time, stay and be well.